Chapter 2 The Zodiac. Any worthwhile study of the occult sciences must be based upon familiarity with the Golden Key, astrology. The various astral vibratory rates that constitute the occult properties of objects can only conveniently be classified by associating them in terminology with similar vibrations of the zodiacal signs and the planets. We have no other terminology than the astrological at present, by which to designate the various astral forces, which are the chief subjects of study in the occult sciences. The language of the stars, then, is the only language we possess today by which we can converse intelligently of occult matters. The alphabet of this language has 22 letters comprising the 10 planets and the 12 zodiacal signs. The planets constitute the vowels. In Chapter 3, Course 1, Laws of Occultism, I have already designated the chief vibratory quality of each planet. And now, that we may be familiar with the whole alphabet customarily used in occult discourse, I shall take up the discussion of the consonants, the 12 zodiacal signs. To begin with, we must understand of what the zodiac consists. The Earth, in its annual journey around the Sun, follows an elliptical path. This is the same path apparently followed by the Sun. Because the eclipses of the Sun and Moon all take place along this path, it is called the ecliptic. In astrology, to avoid the constant repetition of the phrase, Sun, Moon, and planets, it is customary to include all in the term planets. The Sun, strictly speaking, is not a planet but a star past middle age. Neither is the Moon a planet. It is a satellite of the Earth, relative to its own life processes hoary with years. With this definition in mind, I may next say that none of the planets in their orbital revolutions move much to the north or south of the ecliptic. That is, none of them in its movement gets more than a few degrees away from the apparent path of the Sun. There is thus a belt arching the heavens from west to east from which the planets never wander. This belt was considered by the ancients, from whom much of our astrological knowledge is derived, to extend 9 degrees north and 9 degrees south of the apparent path of the Sun. The very word planet means wandering, and unlike the stars, the planets may be observed to meander along this path. The stars are self-luminous suns, but the planets are masses of matter much smaller than our Sun. They shine by reflected light, and held by the gravitational pull of the Sun, revolve around it, as does the planet Earth, in elliptical orbits. This belt, through which all the planets move, is mapped by starry constellations. These, for the most part, are traced to represent animals. Hence, as the word means an animal, this belt through the sky, in the center of which is the apparent path of the Sun, is called the zodiac. Bearing in mind that the center of the zodiac is the Sun's path, for while it is really the Earth that moves, yet to avoid countless repetition of the word apparent, it is customary to speak as if it were the Sun that moves. It is easy to see that the zodiac may have a definite starting point. The Sun each year moves north from the southern celestial hemisphere to the northern celestial hemisphere, bringing with it the summer season. It does this because its path, the ecliptic, is inclined at an angle of 23 degrees, 26 minutes, 56 seconds to the plane of the Earth's equator, the projection of which in the sky is called the celestial equator. Because the ecliptic and celestial equator are not identical, and not parallel, they must intersect each other. The line of their intersection is called the equinoctial color. The points where the Sun, following its path, the ecliptic, crosses the celestial equator, are called the vernal equinox and the autumnal equinox. They are called equinoxes, because when the Sun reaches these points, the nights are equal in duration to the days. Such terminology may seem slightly technical. Everyone, however, is familiar with the changes of the seasons from winter to spring and from summer to autumn. These changes are caused by the Sun crossing the equinoctial color, crossing from the southern celestial hemisphere to the northern celestial hemisphere about the 21st of March each year, and from the northern celestial hemisphere to the southern celestial hemisphere each year about the 23rd of September. These points in the path of the Sun, where it crosses the celestial equator, are easily ascertained in the sky, and, since they usher in the two halves of the year, winter and summer, are manifestly of great importance. Of these two points, it is found experimentally that the one, where the sun crosses the celestial equator in spring, is the more important, and constitutes the commencement of the zodiac. The zodiac, then, though a circular belt in the sky, has a definite starting point. This starting point is not determined by any of the stars or constellations, but by the place among the stars and constellations during any given year, where the sun crosses from south declination to north declination. It commences at the vernal, or spring, equinox. There is undoubtedly a good reason, one that with sufficient knowledge could be traced, why man has 10 fingers and 10 toes, while a chicken has but 4 toes and only the atrophied remnants of fingers. We are accustomed to accept the number of toes an animal has without much questioning, merely because observation teaches us that it is common for certain creatures to possess a given number of digits. Likewise, we may accept, because observation demonstrates it to be true, that there are 12 major divisions of the zodiac. Were we to delve deeply enough, we undoubtedly should learn why 12 and not 10, but as observed in their influence upon human life, there are 12 equal chief divisions. That is, starting at the point where the sun crosses the celestial equator in the spring, and following its path until again it crosses the celestial equator the following spring, some 12 months later, this circular pathway is found to have 12 equal segments, each segment possessing a vibratory influence peculiarly its own. Such a segment of the belt about the heavens, the center of which is the sun's path, is called a sign of the zodiac. The signs of the zodiac should not be confused with the constellations. The position of the signs in the sky is referable to the position of the sun relative to the earth. The place among the stars where the sun crosses the celestial equator during the spring of any year is the point where the zodiac commences that year. This point constantly, but not uniformly, shifts in reference to the stars and constellations. It shifts back among the constellations, these being composed of stars that lie along the zodiac at such a rate that it moves completely around the circle of stars in 25,868 years. This precessional movement is not uniform, but variable, almost ceasing at some times and at others becoming rapid. Thus, while the average amount may be taken as 50.2 a year, should it be necessary to calculate the exact motion at any time, what is called the equation of the equinox must be taken into account, which is the difference between the actual position and the position had it moved uniformly. This backward movement of the commencing point of the zodiac is called the precession of the equinoxes, and its motion through the constellations of stars gives rise to the various astrological ages. So far as the effect is concerned, it makes no difference whether the armature revolves around an electromagnet or the electromagnet revolves around the armature. The sun is an electromagnet, the lines of force from which are cut by the planets as they revolve around it. The stars of space also radiate energy, the lines of which are cut by the sun in its movement among them. Such fields of force as are radiated by our sun and by the stars probably vary in intensity in different places, just as the field of force about a magnet varies at different points in a circle traced around it, due to the location of its poles. We need not be surprised, then, to find that the vibrations that reach the Earth from the Sun and planets from different sections of the circle they apparently make about the Earth are dissimilar in quality and in power. The celestial equator, coinciding on Earth with the Earth's equator, divides the Earth astronomically into north and south polarity. And it is found experimentally that the relation of the Sun to this division of the Earth determines the relation of the Earth to the various sections of the field of force through which the planets move. In other words, the signs of the zodiac owe their peculiar vibratory quality to the definite section of the heavens they occupy relative to the positions of the Sun and Earth. In determining these various intensities in the field of force through which the planets move, the stars seem to have little or no influence, for, although the zodiac shifts continually through the constellations, the influence of the signs of the zodiac throughout the ages has remained unchanged. This is not the place to discourse of astrological ages. But it would be amiss not to point out that the constellations do have an influence of their own, an influence that apparently is quite distinct from the signs, although it must be gauged in association with them. I have already mentioned the backward shifting of the signs through the constellations. This apparent motion is caused by the attraction of the Sun and Moon on the Earth's equator. The Earth is flattened at the poles, being thicker at the equator. Hence their gravitational pull at the equator is greater, and as the equator is inclined to the plane of pull of the Sun and Moon, the latter influence is toward causing the inclination to become less, in other words, to pull the equator down closer to the direction of their pull. The Earth, however, is revolving rapidly, like a top. And like a top, that leans from a vertical position and yet spins without falling, the Earth resists this pull at the equator, and remains spinning and leaning at about the same inclination. But, as the peg of a leaning top slowly moves about in a circle, causing its equator to gyrate, so the pole of the Earth and its projection in the sky move in a circle about the pole of the ecliptic. This does not cause a change of inclination in the axis of the Earth, but causes the axis to gyrate, and this causes the equator of the Earth and its projection in the sky to slowly move in relation to the ecliptic. In determining this movement of vernal equinox, the point in the heavens, where the Sun crosses the celestial equator, is the station of importance. The constellations bear the same names as do the zodiacal signs. In fact, each evidently was traced among the stars pictorially, to represent the influence of the sign bearing the same name. When the Sun at the vernal equinox, the commencement of the zodiac, is found in the constellation Aries, the period is said to be in the Aryan Age. When the Sun at the vernal equinox is found to be in the constellation Pisces, it is said to be the Piscean Age. When the Sun at the vernal equinox is found in the constellation Aquarius, it is said to be the Aquarian Age. These ages, and their lesser subdivisions, are found to influence the world at large. They denote that the Sun and Earth are in such relations to the stars, among which our whole solar system is rushing, that they transmit vibrations from this wider region, cut definite fields of energy, that influence the whole of humanity, giving direction to its evolution. Having stated that each sign of the zodiac differs from the others in vibratory quality, it is next, in order to discuss in what way this difference expresses itself. It manifests chiefly, but not exclusively, by modifying the tone quality of any planet located in the signs. In effect, the signs of the zodiac act as so many sounding boards, from which the planetary vibrations are transmitted to us. Each planet has its own particular tone, which it always retains. From a musical standpoint, however, the tone C, or the tone G, or any tone within the octave, may be sounded on a wide variety of instruments. The chief vibratory rate will remain the same, but the tone quality will greatly vary. The same tone sounded on a violin has an entirely different effect upon the hearer than if sounded upon a bugle. The difference in the influence of the same planet, when in one sign, and when in another sign may be quite as great. The difference in such a musical tone, and the difference in the vibratory quality of such a planet, is due not to any change in the essential vibratory rate, but to the difference in the sounding boards, from which they are sent forth. The zodiacal signs are the sounding boards that determine the precise resonance and quality of the planetary vibrations. The signs, because they are keyed to particular vibratory rates, each transmit certain tones much more readily than other tones. They are thus each so sensitive to the vibratory rates of certain planets that they send forth a responsive tone even when the planet is not in the sign. This seems to be on the same principle that made it possible for Caruso to shatter a wine glass across the room by first finding the tone to which it was keyed and then singing this tone. Although the great singer was not touching the glass, he caused it to respond with its own key, and finally caused this tone response to become so violent as to break the glass. Though acting as a sounding board or medium of expression for the planet, each sign has its own key. Likewise, everything on Earth has a key to which it vibrates. When it is discovered that some particular thing on Earth, in the astral realm, or elsewhere, vibrates to the same key as the to which a zodiacal sign vibrates, the thing is said to be ruled by the zodiacal sign. In other words, when discussing occult subjects, if we are told that a certain thought, a certain color, a certain planet, a certain insect, or whatnot, is ruled by a given zodiacal sign, we are thereby apprised of the inner vibratory quality, or key, of the thing considered. Such knowledge is of paramount importance to the occultist. Let us, therefore, without further delay, take up the study of the qualities that a vast amount of careful observation has shown to reside in each sign. The first step in this direction should be to learn the names of the 12 signs, their correct order of sequence, and the particular section of the heavens occupied by each when the vernal equinox is on the eastern horizon. Also, as the signs are designated by symbols in astronomical and astrological tables and literature, such as almanacs and ephemerides, the symbol commonly used to denote each sign should be learned. This information may all be obtained from an inspection of the diagram on page 18, where each sign is associated with its symbol, and the correct sequence is denoted by numerals. Now, although such a method of approach is not absolutely essential, for the sake of systematizing our knowledge of the signs, I find it convenient to have recourse to the magical quaternary rendered in the Bible of Jehovah, but known to initiates, as Jehovah. This is a formula that is found to be as valuable in the solution of occult problems, as any formula of algebra is valuable in the solution of engineering problems. It is the formula, stated in terms of universal principles, that all life, action, and progress are the result of two interacting forces. The first term of the formula is a positive force. The second term is a negative, or reactionary force. The third term of the formula is the point of union where the two meet. The fourth term is the result of that meeting. This formula, Jodhi-Vohi, is universally applicable. Thus, if we desire to apply it to economics, the radical political element of society becomes the jod, or impelling force. The conservative, or reactionary, political element becomes the first he. The point of union, or vo, is the political convention or ballot box. The final he, the product of the struggle, is the form of government resulting. Now, by applying this ancient formula to the zodiacal signs, we find that they separate into four equal groups bearing just such relations to each other, as the terms Jodhi-Vohi suggest. As there are 12 signs in the zodiac, of course each of the four equal groups must contain three signs. And to designate that there are three signs in each group, the groups are called a triplicity. There are, therefore, four zodiacal triplicities. Each triplicity is named after one of the four ancient elements to which it corresponds. These were not considered elements in the sense that chemistry considers sulfur, mercury, carbon, and radium elements. After all, in the true sense of the word, these latter are no more elements than the ancient fire, water, earth, and air, for all are composed of electrons and protons. Fire, to the ancients, was an abstraction by which the qualities of energy, zeal, and enthusiasm, whether expressed in a mineral such as sulfur, or in a vegetable such as mustard, or in a beast, such as a wild cat, might be designated. Water was used to express fluidity, receptivity, and germination. Earth was used to express coldness, concreteness, and solidity. Air was used to express vacillation, intangibleness, alertness, and fleetness. The terms fiery, watery, earthy, and airy were applied alike to objects, persons, and zodiacal signs. Applying our magical formula, the fiery triplicity represents the positive, masculine jod, even as the heat rays of the sun fall upon the world. The watery triplicity is the negative, feminine first he, such as the moisture that quenches the thirst of the parched desert. The earthy triplicity is the point of union of masculine and feminine forces, the vo, as water and heat meet in the earth, to germinate whatever seeds lie in the ground. The airy triplicity is the product springing from the union, the final he, the harvest brought forth in due season. As applied to man, we may say that the union of enthusiasm and affection gestates as effort which results in intelligence. Or, stating it in terms of the fourfold sphinx, we may say that the energy of the lion expresses through the sex of the eagle, bringing about material incarnation and the plodding toil of the bull, to the end of evolving the immortal man. In our study of the triplicities, and in our study of the signs as separate influences, we shall find it convenient to designate their relation to human types and human life. Not that their influence is confined to humanity, but because we are familiar with human qualities. When we learn their correspondences in terms of human character, it will then be no difficult task to determine their correspondences in other departments of nature. In considering the quality of a sign or group of signs, as expressing through humanity, I shall have special reference to people who have the sun in their birth charts in these signs. The sign the sun is in indicates in large measure the quality of the individuality. However, the sign the moon is in at birth largely determines the quality of the mentality, and the sign on the ascendant determines largely the quality of the personality. Furthermore, it should be understood that the sign the sun is in at birth is only one of many factors of the birth chart, all of which must be taken into consideration, and which may greatly modify the characteristics of the sign. Only certain deep-seated motives and impulses that underlie the character can be determined with certainty from the sun sign alone. As there are different classifications of the zodiacal signs, so there are also different methods of classifying people. One of the oldest methods, and one that has distinct advantages, as viewing them in relation to the zodiacal triplicities, is to divide them into four general groups. These groups have to do with the predominant temperament, classified as sanguine, lymphatic, bilious, and nervous. The fiery triplicity embraces the signs Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. People born under this triplicity, meaning primarily the sun being in this triplicity, as explained in Chapter 2, Course 10-1, delineating the horoscope, tend to the sanguine temperament. They possess self-reliance, enthusiasm, zeal, courage, daring, the ability to command others, and a love of activity. In the sense of being able to arouse in themselves and communicate to others initiative and enthusiasm, their characteristic quality is inspiration. The watery triplicity embraces the signs Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces. People born under this triplicity tend to the lymphatic temperament. Their lives are largely centered in the home and affections. They are sympathetic, timid, dreamy, submissive, given to domestic life, receptive, yielding, mediumistic, and greatly influenced by their surroundings. In the sense that they are chiefly actuated by their feelings, rather than by carefully reasoned lines of conduct, their characteristic quality is emotion. The earthy triplicity embraces the signs Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn. People born under this triplicity tend to the bilious temperament. They are not given to bursts of enthusiasm, but express their ideas concretely, having the ability to apply themselves patiently to the affairs of this life, and to turn all they contact to some material use. On the farm, associated with some industry, or managing some great corporation, they are toilers. In the sense of relying upon reason and the reports of the senses, and in interesting themselves in the affairs of earth that have value here and now, their characteristic quality is practicality. The airy triplicity embraces the signs Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius. People born under this triplicity tend to the nervous temperament. They are mentally alert, volatile, changeable, and socially inclined, desiring to live largely upon the mental plane. They are interested in education, literature, and art, are fond of conversation, and find pleasure in the exchange of ideas. In the sense of desiring refinement and intellectual culture, their characteristic quality is aspiration. We have now applied our magical quaternary formula in its broadest sense. Under this formula, things are not only perceived to express our broad qualities, but viewed from a different perspective are seen to be a trinity. Then, turning them to be viewed still closer, we perceive them also to be a duality, and finally, from another point of inspection, to be a unity. It will readily be seen, however, that these views offer no contradiction to the magical quaternary, for we perceive the three to be already contained in the four. The duod likewise appears in the quaternary. It is the principle of polarity. And, of course, unity expresses in the various separate parts of the four. Altogether, then, this magical formula, when its different perspectives are added together, completes the cycle and starts another. 4-4-3-2-1 added together are 10. As I illustrated briefly the application of the four factors of the magical formula, I should not, I think, omit a brief illustration of the Trinity. It is everywhere manifest. but that now most immediate to my consciousness is the sense of sight. How do we distinguish the objects we see? By a trinity. Straight lines are positive. Curved lines are negative. These are two factors. The third is their point of union, the combination of straight and curved lines. As you look at this page, its meaning is conveyed to you by a trinity, straight lines, curved lines, and their mutual relation to each other. The lines themselves, as well as every object and every picture, is conveyed to the consciousness by still another trinity. There are light spaces and there are shadows, or colored spaces. Neither alone has significance. It is only when dark spaces and light spaces have the third element, the point of union, that form is perceived. Now it is true, that in considering a trinity it may be turned so as, to be viewed as a quaternary or as a duality or as made up of unities. As a quaternary we might say that the fourth factor in the above illustration is the printed word or the form as perceived, just as we could properly consider straight lines and curved lines as the duality, and each as a unity. But this is changing the perspective, and in no way vitiates the usefulness of the trinity. Matter, for instance, exists in three states, gaseous, liquid, and solid. Likewise the zodiacal signs fall into three groups, the movable signs, the mutable signs, and the fixed signs. We have already seen that there are four triplicities. Each triplicity contains three signs, and each of these signs expresses the element to which the triplicity corresponds in a different state of activity. This different state of activity is called the quality of the sign. Triplicity and quality must not be confused. There are four triplicities: fire, water, earth, and air, but there are only three qualities: movable, mutable, and fixed. The signs of the movable quality are Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. They express the nature of each of the four elements in the highest state of activity. Matter in the gaseous state, though chemically the same, is far more active and possesses different qualities than when in the liquid or solid state. People, also, born under the movable signs, are active, energetic, and given to change, even as gas generates power and finds it easy to move in various directions, little hindered by gravitation. They break the trails that others follow, and start the enterprises that others finish. The natives of Aries pioneer in daring enterprises and adventure. Cancer people pioneer in home building and in foods. Those born under Libra pioneer in literature, art, and social affairs, while those belonging to the sign Capricorn are pioneers in business and industry. The signs of the movable quality produce people who are pioneers. The signs of the mutable quality are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. They express the nature of each of the four elements in a medium state of activity. Matter in the liquid state, though possessing the same chemical elements as when gaseous or solid, is more subject to gravitation and less aggressive in its chemical action than when gaseous, but more active and yielding, and less given to permanence than when in a solid state. The mutable signs are a happy medium between the excessive activity of the movable signs and the stubborn resistance of the fixed signs. Liquid cannot force its way through an aperture as easily as can gas, but once a channel has been established it quickly follows the line of least resistance. People born under the mutable signs seldom break trails, but follow on the heels of the pioneers. As liquid conforms to the object with which it is in contact, so mutable people are the most adaptable of all. The signs of the mutable quality produce people who seldom originate an enterprise. They are the developers. The signs of the fixed quality are Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. They express the nature of each of the four elements in the lowest state of activity. Matter in the solid state is rigid, durable, and unyielding. People born under the fixed signs are quite as unbending, firm, and resistant. Solids find difficulty in altering their form and location, and people belonging to the fixed signs are strongly attached to their customary environment, their customary manner of doing things, and their customary methods of thought. They have great resistance to pressure of all kinds, strong endurance, plodding perseverance, and the ability to give close attention to detail. They are not originators, and not enthusiastic developers, But when development has reached a high degree, they work out details that constitute improvements. The signs of the fixed quality produce people who are perfectors. Now we found when considering sight, that it could be viewed as a trinity from two different perspectives. We also find that the signs of the zodiac may be viewed as a trinity in two different ways. In addition to the quality, which, as we have seen, relates to the state of activity of the signs belonging to each of the four elements, there is also the matter of precedence in the zodiac of the signs belonging to each of the four elements. Thus of the fiery signs, one of them occurs first in the zodiac, another second, and another third, in the order of their succession, commencing with the vernal equinox. It is found that this matter of precedence in the zodiac has much to do with the etherealization of the spiritual and mental forces, as expressed through the signs. This manifests itself in human life chiefly in regard to whether the motive for action is largely internal or largely external. Reverting to our comparison of the radiations from the planets to definite musical tones, and of the signs to sounding boards, from which these tones are reverberated, we might class the fiery signs as stringed instruments, the watery signs as the liquid chimes, the earthy signs as the booming drums, and the airy signs as the wind instruments. We might even go further, and class the movable signs as those instruments that take the celestial treble, the mutable signs as those that take the ripe tenor, and the fixed signs as those that sound the rolling bass. Yet, even with such a classification, there would still remain to be considered the particular tone quality of each instrument, by which it could be discerned from other instruments, even from those playing the same tones, and employing a similar method, as the tone of a guitar may be distinguished from the same tone on a violin. This tone quality is thus still further elaborated by considering the signs' precedence in the zodiac, compared to other signs of the same triplicity. This designation is called its degree of emanation. The first sign of a triplicity in the zodiac belongs to the first degree of emanation, the second sign to the second degree of emanation, and the third sign to the third degree of emanation. The signs of the first degree of emanation are Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. People born under these signs act from motives that chiefly spring from their own feelings, ideas, and inward yearnings. When expressing themselves, they tend to externalize their own inner nature with liberty. The signs of the second degree of emanation are Leo, Virgo, Libra, and Scorpio. People born under these signs act from their own feelings, ideas, and inward yearnings, tempered by a full consideration of what other people feel, think, and advise. When expressing themselves, they tend to externalize their own inner nature with modification. The signs of the third degree of emanation are Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. People born under these signs act less from their own feelings, ideas, and inward yearnings than from ideas and attitudes that have reached them from without. When expressing themselves, they tend to externalize their own inner nature with reserve. We are now ready to consider the zodiacal signs as a duality. Commencing with Aries, as the first positive and masculine sign, every alternate sign is negative and female. The positive, masculine, electrical signs are Aries, Gemini, Leo, Libra, Sagittarius, and Aquarius. The negative, feminine, magnetic signs are Taurus, Cancer, Virgo, Scorpio, Capricorn, and Pisces. To complete our view of the zodiacal signs, we have yet to discuss them as a unity. We have considered them as a quaternary, as a trinity, as a duality, and now we must consider them as a unity, each sign, as a sounding board of specific tone quality for celestial vibrations. Aries, pictured among the constellations by the ram, is the first sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element fire, hence we expect it to be energetic, courageous, and daring. It is a movable sign, comparable to burning gas, therefore not to be confined or dictated to by another. Belonging to the first degree of emanation, it is little influenced by precedent or environment. It is a masculine sign, and assertive. In human anatomy, it rules the head. As the first sign of the zodiac, it represents birth. As ruling the brain, it signifies perception. Aries people express a fiery will, a militant power, executive ability, imperious leadership, and the dauntless pioneer spirit. They are ambitious, enterprising, forceful, combative, self-willed, keen, independent, active, and desirous of being in command. Impulsive and fiery, yet even in apparent rashness they are guided by intellect. All the world seems new to Aries people. Their dominant idea is I am. Taurus, traced among the stars as the bull, is the second sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element Earth, hence we expect it to be industrious, patient, and practical. It is a fixed sign, comparable to frozen Earth, therefore, stubborn, immovable, and conservative. Belonging to the first degree of emanation, it bows little to the opinions of others, and usually has a tendency to become interested in psychic phenomena. It is a feminine sign, reserved and not intruding. In human anatomy, it rules the ears, the base of the brain, the neck, and the throat. Commands are received through the ears, and Taurus people are obedient servants, careful, plodding, and self-reliant. The motor nerves spring from the region ruled by Taurus, hence we find them persistent and untiring workers. They have pronounced powers of discrimination, will wait a long time for plans to mature, are secretive, and possess enormous reserve energy. They are strongly attracted to money, and express themselves by its use. Capricorn is the organizer of industry, Virgo the engineer, and Taurus the perfecter of its details and the custodian of its wealth. The dominant idea is I have. Gemini, pictured in the sky by the twins, is the third sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element air, consequently is volatile, intellectual, and changeable. It is a mutable sign, comparable to liquid air, therefore possessing wonderful powers of mental expansion and a constant flow of ideas expressed through conversation or writing. Belonging to the first degree of emanation, it is not bound so much by material motives as actuated by the desire for mental expression. It is a masculine sign, able to exert considerable initiative. In human anatomy, it rules the hands, arms, and upper respiratory system. The hands, as organs of execution, are dual, and Gemini people are remarkable for both executive ability and versatility. They usually are interested in several things at once, and change their occupation often. They have a fondness for learning, are restless, dexterous, sensitive, skillful, and intuitive, and ever on the alert to learn the why of things. Their dominant idea is I think. Cancer, represented in the heavens as a crab, is the fourth sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element water, therefore is sensitive, receptive, and timid. It is a movable sign, comparable to fog, subject to whims, moods, and varying changes, not to be confined in a single environment, but possessing unusual freedom to alter its own position. Belonging to the first degree of emanation, its moods and yearnings are expressed pronouncedly. It is a feminine sign, but makes up with tenacity its lack of aggressiveness. In human anatomy, it rules the seat of nourishment, the breasts, bosom, lower lungs, and stomach. Cancer people absorb ideas and conditions and after digesting them are capable of diverting them to their own use. They are not active physically, but are intensely active assimilating and redistributing sense impressions. Mediumistic, reflective, dreamy, mild of temper, emotional, very domestic, they respond to kindness, sympathy, and approbation, are fond of publicity, and are influenced by their surroundings. The dominant idea is I feel. Leo, designated in the firmament by a lion, is the fifth sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element fire, therefore is impulsive, passionate, and daring. It is a fixed sign, comparable to hot metal, dominating, ambitious, and resolute. Belonging to the second degree of emanation, its actions spring from the emotions rather than from the intellect. It is a masculine sign, possessed of unbending dignity. In human anatomy, it rules the heart and back. Leo people are sympathetic, warm-hearted, candid, forceful, and fond of honors and high office. They are not so active as Aries people, but possess great determination to rise, and strive to rule through strength and stability rather than through alertness and activity. Their ideas are large and majestic, despising petty effort, and in striving to reach higher states often overreaching. Unlike Aries people, When roused emotionally, they do not count the cost. The dominant idea is I will. Virgo, emblazoned above as the celestial virgin, is the sixth sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element earth, therefore is practical, industrious, and worldly. It is a mutable sign, comparable to liquid earth, such as mortar, binding together what others quarry, selecting materials furnished by other people, and placing them in their proper order. Belonging to the second degree of emanation, it is neither so independent of environmental influences as Taurus, nor so dependent upon them in regard to its completeness of expression as Capricorn. It is a feminine sign, preferring arbitration to combat. In human anatomy, it rules the navel and bowels. Virgo people are intensely discriminative, even as the function of the intestines is to assimilate the food required by the body. The constant process of analysis for the purpose of discrimination inclines them to be critical. Intensely active mentally, they have a faculty for acquiring knowledge, being studious, scientific, mentally alert, ingenious, witty, fluent, discerning, and ever seeking how desired results may be accomplished. The dominant idea is I analyze. Libra, pictured along the pathway of the sun as the scales, is the seventh sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element air, therefore is changeable, bright, and socially inclined. It is a movable sign, comparable to the gusts of wind on an April day, pioneering in the arts and in social affairs. Belonging to the second degree of emanation, it combines idealism with worldly motives. It is a masculine sign, adaptable, but not submissive. Libra people are easily influenced by others, but quickly regain their equilibrium. They are sensitive, refined, sympathetic, artistic, neat, particular, dislike unclean work, and are inordinately fond of approbation. Lovers of justice, peace, and harmony, they are kind, generous, and affectionate, finding social relations extremely important, and a partner often essential to their happiness. They are fond of music and entertainment, are courteous, and desire to make many friends, yet in their affections are somewhat changeable. The dominant idea is I balance. Scorpio, pictured among the constellations by a scorpion, is the eighth sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element water, hence has strong emotions and is domestically inclined. It is a fixed sign, comparable to water crystallized through great pressure rather than through lowered temperature, and therefore capable of exerting tremendous force, boiling the moment it finds an avenue of escape. At once unyielding, yet it is capable of exerting immense pressure upon its environment. Belonging to the second degree of emanation, it moves more with the world's mental current than athwart its flow. It is a feminine sign, very receptive and meditative. In human anatomy, it rules the generative organs and procreative attributes. Scorpio people have a never-failing fund of ideas and resources, and an abundant life-giving magnetism. They are proud, secretive, reserved, jealous, energetic, ingenious, strong-willed, determined, enterprising, and skillful, making good surgeons, doctors, chemists, scientists, and mechanics. Their dominant idea is I desire. Sagittarius, represented among the stars as a centaur, is the ninth sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element fire, hence is energetic, hasty, and enthusiastic. It is a mutable sign, comparable to molten metal, aggressive and impulsive, but not dominating. Belonging to the third degree of emanation, its actions are largely shaped by what other people think proper and in good taste. It is a masculine sign, positive and forceful. In human anatomy, it rules the hips and thighs, which are the foundation of volition and locomotion. Sagittarius people are a happy medium between Aries people, who are ruled by their heads, and Leo people, who are ruled by their hearts. They love outdoor sports, are loyal, patriotic, generous, free, ambitious, charitable, and jovial. Frank, outspoken, self-reliant, they are great travelers, are very conservative, have prompt decision, and the ability to command others. The dominant idea is I see. Capricorn, traced in the constellations as the goat, is the tenth sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element earth, hence is practical, industrious, and acquisitive. It is a movable fine, comparable to dust, adapting itself to every requirement to gain its ends, persistent, subtle, and ambitious. Belonging to the third degree of emanation, it acts largely from external motives. It is a feminine sign, gaining its point by cunning rather than by force. In human anatomy, it rules the knees. Capricorn people are humbly submissive to those in power, and unceasing in their efforts to gain power, that others may bend the knee to them. They are diplomatic, good organizers, ever alert to take advantage of circumstances or the weakness of the other people, are careful, cautious, frugal, and insistent, with thoughtful, serious, reflective minds. Their dominant idea is I use. Aquarius, shown in the vault of heaven as the man, is the 11th sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element air, hence loves the society of others and the interchange of ideas. It is a fixed sign, comparable to crystallized air, is the most practical of all the airy signs, and the one possessing the most continuity. Belonging to the third degree of emanation, its actions are greatly influenced by its external environment. It is a masculine sign, extremely assertive. In human anatomy, it rules the ankles, the active power of locomotion. Aquarius people are very progressive, usually possessing ideas more advanced than their companions. They are inventive and scientific, pleasant, friendly, quiet, patient, determined, faithful, cheerful, sincere, easily influenced by kindness, artistic, refined, have strong likes and dislikes, are greatly interested in education and new discoveries, and like nothing better than an argument. The dominant idea is I know. Pisces, represented among the constellations as the fishes, is the 12th sign of the zodiac. It belongs to the element water, hence is dreamy, mystical, and romantic. It is a mutable sign, comparable to water, mirroring like a lake its environment, moved by every motion near it. Belonging to the third degree of emanation, it tends to become all things to all people. It is a feminine sign, listless and negative. In human anatomy, it rules the feet, the foundation of the human temple. Pisces people, though imaginative and dreamy, have the ability to flow into such grooves of the world's affairs that they usually acquire the material things necessary for comfort. They are idealistic, sensitive, mediumistic, prone to worry, peaceable, sympathetic, prudent, modest, and often lack self-confidence. No other sign has such extremes of temperament and ability, for Pisces people will be found both on the height and in the depth, and some of them are successful in almost every line of human endeavor. The dominant idea is I believe. Expression of planets through the houses. A planet in a house, or ruling it, influences the events of the department of life mapped by the house in the following manner. Sun expresses through vigor. Moon expresses through fluctuation. Mercury expresses through thought. Venus expresses through gratuities. Mars expresses through strife. Jupiter expresses through abundance. Saturn expresses through poverty. Uranus expresses through eccentricity. Neptune expresses through illusion. Pluto expresses through coercion. Departments of life ruled by the houses. Each mundane house maps the particular section of man's astral body, or the particular section of the world's astral form, the inner plane activities of which determine what happens in one department of life. The departments of life thus mapped are as follows. First house, personality, health, the body. Second house, money, personal property. Third house, thoughts, studies, short journeys, relatives. Fourth house, father, real estate, home, end of things. Fifth house, speculation, children, love affairs, entertainment. Sixth house, work, illness, food, employees. Seventh house, marriage, partnership, public, open enemies. Eighth house, death, inheritance, taxes, money of others. Ninth house, publicly expressed opinions, books, religion, long journeys. Tenth house, the job, business, honor, reputation. 11th house, hopes, friends, acquaintances. 12th house, secret enemies, disappointments, astral entities,